Hello again, friends, and welcome to Access City Hall on the Madison City Channel. I'm your host, Stu Levitan. It's nice to have you with us. You know, there are lots of interesting and influential committees, commissions, and boards in city government. Most of them do things like pass motions and adopt resolutions. Some, like the Plan Commission, the Urban Design Commission, and yes, the Landmarks Commission, also have the power to grant or deny necessary permits. But only one has the power to build things from shopping centers to apartment buildings, to issue bonds, and to run a fairly large low-income housing program. That agency, of course, is the Community Development Authority, which technically isn't really a part of city government, but is in fact an independent and separate political body. I have had the great opportunity of serving on the CDA since the year 2000, a tenure which is now winding down, which makes this a perfect time to discuss the CDA's activities with its relatively new executive director, Natalie Erdman. Natalie, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Of the many varied and different things the CDA does, from low-income housing to industrial revenue bonds, what do you think the most important part of the program is?
The overall mission of the organization to work in challenged neighborhoods and to bring a variety of tools that don't exist elsewhere in the city to revitalize those neighborhoods is really the thing that brings all of the segments together, whether it's affordable housing, whether it's providing rental subsidy for lower income residents, or whether it's issuing bonds and doing development work. Our ability is to work in challenged neighborhoods where the private market is not working effectively and try to make things better for the people that live there and for the businesses that exist there as well.
What do you find the most interesting part of the program?
Well, my background's in real estate development. And so obviously the development aspects of the job are interesting. I like the fact that in this job I can wed a development finance background with really a social mission. And that we can look at ways to improve our community, not just to develop real estate to make money, but actually to develop real estate to develop a better community. And I think that's the part that is the most interesting to me.
And what's the most difficult?
You know, it's a difficult process to develop real estate and run portfolios of property in a quasi-governmental agency. And I think having a board structure brings a lot of people of talent to our task and gives us a good oversight, but it takes a lot of time to actually organize material so that the board, the Community Development Authority board, can have the right influences and bring the skills of the people on that board to the tasks that we have.
Now, as you mentioned, you were a developer, you're in the private sector. What's the most frustrating thing about being in the public sector compared to being in the private sector?
In the private sector, you can usually go down the hall to an individual and say, these are the priorities that we have, this is how I'm going to set my priorities. And that individual that you report to says, yes, I agree with you, or no, I don't, and you resolve it. In the public arena, there are lots of people who have a say. The mayor has an influence, the board chair has an influence, the alder has an influence. And so the part that's the most frustrating is making sure that you line up all of those interests so everybody agrees that this is the direction we're going, this is the mission that we're trying to pursue.
And how has the recent, what we hope is ending recession, affected the activities?
For the Community Development Authority, there are actually a number of financial tools that were available to us in part because of the recession that wouldn't have been available to us otherwise. Some of the stimulus money came through our organization to help us renovate or build new affordable housing. And so we were able to take advantage of that and have several affordable housing developments happen that might not have otherwise happened. The harder part is that as we are in this recession, we see a far greater number of people that need service, whether it's public housing or rental assistance or business loans. There's a bigger need than there was previously.
The CDA was created in about 1970, combining the Madison Housing Agency and Redevelopment Agency, so that we do everything, as I said, from running low-cost public housing in the Section 8 housing voucher program to industrial revenue bonds. Does that make sense for one agency to have such a span activity?
I think it does. We do occasionally struggle with, well, what is the focus? If you have a redevelopment organization that is really looking at developing property, managing property, and putting the financings together to do that, it's not always a direct tie to the part of our agency which we refer to as housing operations, where we're housing 2,600 families who live in poverty through both low-rent public housing, where we receive subsidy from the federal government to help pay for those costs, as well as through the Section 8 voucher program, where again we receive significant subsidy from the federal government to subsidize people's rent. I think the place that those things come together is we are generally serving a population of people who are looking for affordable housing at various levels. We are dealing with real estate and the management of real estate. So what do the revenues look like? What do the expenses look like? And how do you make that management happen efficiently? And I think those things make sense to put together.
But as a board member, you know, to go from, okay, we're now discussing the aspects of the low-rent public housing program. Will we allow smoking in the units? And then the next item of discussion is a $175 million industrial revenue bond for the Widmer building on campus. And I ask myself, who has the skill set to know what good public housing tenant relations are and what a good industrial revenue bond arrangement is? And I don't know that I have the skills. I mean, that's a tough skill set for an individual to have.
That is, but we're fortunate we don't have an individual. We have a board, and we have some people on the board who are very good at managing low-rent public housing. We have other people who are good at the finance of real estate. We have other people like yourself who are really good on the legal side and the ordinance side of our business. And so we use all of those skills. And then within our organization, we have somebody like myself who has a real estate development and finance background. We also have somebody like Augie Olvera, who has been running low-rent public housing for a long time, or Tom Conrad, who came from the Dane County Housing Authority and really has that background with what are the issues that our residents and our Section 8 voucher holders are dealing with.
And we should note that we did invite both the current board chair, Greg Szymanski. He was previously occupied. Tom Conrad is now available, and Augie Olvera has a conga lesson. So your CDA has a housing operations director who's taken conga lessons, which I think is a good thing.
Our staff has a lot of skills, and that would be one of them. Yeah.
What do you regard as your primary skill of all these activities?
I think my primary skill is a finance real estate development skill. But I also have enough background in real estate management to be able to look at, well, what's our process for renting homes or apartments to people, and how do you look at your expenses so that we're really operating efficiently? And I think we have a necessity to be as efficient as possible with the money that we get, so we can house as many people in as high a quality of product as is possible.
Let's talk about some of the housing programs. We've got the low-rent public housing with about 777 units, if I recall correctly.
That's
correct. And the Section 8 housing voucher program of about 1,500. How difficult is it to deal with the constituency groups, to deal with the HUD regulations, to deal with congressional funding, to deal with the various participants in making that housing work?
Well, we have, as you mentioned, 777 units of low-rent public housing. I would add we also have two additional buildings, which take us up to about another 100 units that are what we refer to as project-based Section 8 vouchers from the federal government. And so we're running about 870 units of housing where people who live in that housing pay 30% of their income in rent. So if they have very little income, they pay very little rent. And I think that's really an important housing option for a lot of people. The HUD side is clearly, it's a very regulated funding source. And so you need people who have been around that source and understand what are the requirements from HUD. How do you do your reporting? How do you make sure you're in compliance with the regulations? But there are people who do that, and our staff does it very well. And they have a lot of background and understand that. I think that one of the harder things is to make sure that we're providing housing that's really quality housing for our residents. Some of our residents, you know, 55% of our population of residents are either elderly or disabled, and those people have certain needs to help them stay in their housing. The other 45% are frequently families. You might have single parent families or double parent families, but they have challenges as well in terms of employment and child care and the things that all of health care, the things that all of us deal with. But they have less income, and so those items in life make their lives more difficult and more complicated. And I think being a good property manager and understanding the needs of those populations is really important.
There was a conservative blogger who no longer is running for Isthmus named David Blaska, who had seemed to have a real fixation with talking about the bad things about Section 8 and kept drawing a definite correlation, at least, between Section 8 and crime. What are the facts about the relationship between Section 8 and crime as opposed to the relationship between poverty and crime? And how do we get people to understand what that truth is?
You know, we have 1,500 plus people who use a Section 8 voucher assistance to pay their rent across the city of Madison. And when you look at the dispersion of those units, it's very broad. And so therefore, I don't think you can draw a direct line between a resident that uses a Section 8 voucher and crime, because we certainly have Section 8 voucher recipients living in all of our neighborhoods. And so therefore, you can't say, well, this voucher is connected to an area where there's high crime. I think you have to be aware of the fact that poverty is one thing, but it is definitely not an indicator of somebody's, just because somebody lives in poverty doesn't mean that they participate in crime. Mm.
Do you feel the need to respond to like blog entries and commentary that makes a relationship, or do you just figure your explanation will never catch up with the fact that they can write
question.
The same thing
yeah.
the next day? I mean, I tried responding to Blask, and eventually I just gave up because I just couldn't keep up with him.
Well, since I've taken this job, I find that a lot of people have opinions about people who live in public housing, people who use a Section 8 voucher. And I always ask, well, when was the last time you had a conversation with somebody who lives in Section 8, and uses a Section 8 voucher or lives in public housing? Do you really understand who those populations are? You may think you know, but until you've really been working in our program, you don't really know who all the people are. As I mentioned, 55% of our residents are elderly and disabled people. They may not be what you have in your mind when you think of low-rent public housing residents or Section 8 voucher participants. We have a voucher program that's for veterans, and those veterans are receiving, it's called the VASH program, they're receiving assistance from the Veteran Administration, lifestyle supportive assistance, and then they're coming to us for a special voucher so these veterans can have housing as well. We have a family self-sufficiency program where families can be in the program, have a voucher, but work towards self-sustaining economics. So with the number of people that we house, I'm very hesitant to respond to people who want to deal with stereotypes. And when they've seen all the statistics, then I would be more willing to discuss the details.
Now, how much did you know about the daily lives of Section 8 and public housing recipients before taking the job?
Not much. I would have been one of the people who thought perhaps I knew but didn't really. I learn every day really interesting things from our staff who, our staff, I just can't say enough good things about the work that they do and their understanding of the families and the individuals that we house. And I try as best I can to spend time with them, to spend time on our properties, spend time in the neighborhoods where we've developed properties so that I have a better understanding of who are we serving and what's important to them and what are their needs.
There's also a Section 8 home ownership aspect.
There is.
How important is that?
It's a relatively small program, but I think an important program. We have about 27 families who have used their Section 8 voucher to purchase a home. And so HUD says that the rental assistance that they give to this family can be used to make a mortgage payment. And I think it's a great example of some families who have said, yeah, we want to own a home and we want to use our Section 8 voucher to help us do that. And it provides them with a stable living environment and the potential to build equity.
How big do we think that program can get?
I think that program will get as big as our resident base will allow it to be. So as we let people know that this is an option, clearly not everybody in our program has the interest or the ability to go out and get a mortgage to buy a home. But we want to assist those people who do.
Romnes Apartments on the slightly south side. Are we going to be building additions there?
I don't know. One of the things we're going to do with the board this year is take a look at our strategic plan for the next 3 to 5 years. We're currently working on a redevelopment plan for the Truax public housing site and are in the second phase, and there'll probably be 3 or 4 phases there. And we're going to redevelop that property and bring in modern housing. And then the question is, where do you go next? And certainly wherever we work, we will be working with the residents who live on the site. We won't displace people, but we'll also be working with the neighbors. And we could be looking at a facility that we have in the Triangle, which is down at Regent Street and Park Street. We could be looking at some housing that we have out on the south side, or we could be looking at Romnes. And I think that's something I'd like the board to consider about where is the logical next step.
You mentioned the project-based Section 8. So we've got one of those in Allied Drive, mm-hmm. the Project Home, access to independence, various providers. Part of that program enables people who have been in a project with a Section 8 voucher for a year to then port out. How serious a concern is it that people would take a voucher to be in one of those project-based voucher buildings and then after a year leave and take that out of, so essentially that lets them jump the line because we've got a waiting list to get into the Section 8, except if you get one of these project-based vouchers. Is that a concern?
It is a concern. We've talked about it quite a bit, and we've had our Housing Operations Committee talk about it and our board talk about it. Clearly, we don't want to have the only entry to getting a Section 8 voucher, we call it a tenant voucher, where I can rent from anywhere. The only way to get one of those is to go through a project-based voucher where I have to live at a specific property. And so we are looking at how do we calibrate the system so that you can enter our Section 8 program either from our waiting list or you can choose to live in a specific facility. And we don't have all the answers yet.
But we're still working on them.
We are.
We are talking with CDA Executive Director Natalie Erdman. It is the March episode of Access City Hall. We're going to take a short pause for some important announcements and come right back. Don't you go away.
We are this close.
We are this close.
To Tirek Mordes.
This close to making history.
Of on Wantinti.
We are this close.
We are this close.
We are this close.
This close to changing the world. We are this close to making sure no child suffers a crippling disease
ever again.
We are this close to making history.
We are this close to ending polio.
Because we are this close to ending polio.
We are this close to ending polio.
We are
this close to changing the world.
This close.
All we need is you.
Is you.
Is you.
We are this close. This close.
Be a part of history at rotary.org/endpolio.
Welcome. I understand you need a little help with your mortgage. Want to avoid foreclosure. Smart move. Candy? Well, you know, you're in luck. We're experts in this sort of thing. Mortgage, rigmarole, whatnot.
Really?
Absolutely. And we guarantee results, you know, for a small fee, of course. Such are the benefits of having a professional on your side. Why don't we get a contract? Who wants a contract?
Gay
you go, Pete.
Thanks, Betty.
Write a toner.
Sign it. Come on, sign it.
Families around the country, every single day, saving homes.
We will talk it over with
If you're facing foreclosure, make sure you're talking to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE.
When you earn your GED diploma, the barriers in your life fall. Earn your GED diploma and begin your brighter future.
If I ride, I will know the way the trees smell after the rain. I will grow a heart so strong that hospitals will take Tuesdays off. If I ride, road rage will turn into laughter, and oil tankers will haul chocolate milk. And I won't be a boy or a girl. I will just be a rider.
Welcome back to the March episode of Access City Hall on the Madison City Channel. I'm still Stu, you're still you. We are still talking with Natalie Erdman, the Executive Director of the Community Development Authority. We're now going to turn from Section 8 and low-rent public housing to some of our business activities and the industrial revenue bonds and the other economic development activities we undertake. We've got this shopping center on Park Street, the Villager on Park, which has proven to be something of a challenge.
It has. I think a shopping center on South Park Street would be a challenge in any regards, but we've been working on redeveloping that shopping center since long before I came here. And I think we're rounding the corner to the final pieces of putting that facility together.
We've gotten rid of two bad gas stations.
Mm-hmm.
We've enabled the Urban League of Greater Madison and the library and Planned Parenthood to have a standalone building. Are we fulfilling what the council and the city thought was going to be there in terms of economic generation, or are we going to have a service agency building that really doesn't create a lot of retail activity but provides social service activities?
I'm not sure that I wasn't around when the council and when the board made the decision to purchase the Village on Park, so I'm not sure what they had hoped to accomplish. I think what has been accomplished was the most likely route. It's hard to imagine a bustling retail center at that location. I think what's there is valuable. Madison College has a significant presence, which has grown in that location. Access Community Health has a facility, and they're looking at purchasing a lot from us and building their own building and growing in that location. And as you mentioned, the Urban League and Planned Parenthood and the library have built a new building. We continue to have the UWA grocery store, and I think they'll be staying with us, and we'll be building out some new space for them. So I think we have a good set of long-term credit tenants in that location. And we'd like to add some retail tenants to support those credit tenants as well. I think it's an appropriate use at this time. Real estate moves and changes over time, and we'd hope to see that South Park corridor continue to develop so that eventually you get economic generators that are not necessarily service providers.
Credit tenants? What is that phrase?
Credit tenants, people who can pay their rent. People, you know, there's the small, just starting mom and pop business, and their credit's not quite as good. And then there's Madison College, and you know they're going to pay you the rent every month.
And what's been the biggest challenge about making this project work?
Really, the biggest challenge was renovating portions of the facility while there were still other tenants in the building. And so you had to go through piece by piece, redevelop a portion, move the tenant over, then redevelop the second portion, move somebody into that space. And I think that has been a continued Chinese puzzle of moving the pieces around to try to get a maximum efficiency on the site.
And how long before the project is done?
Well, I don't know. Our next phase is really to hopefully finish some work with Access Community Health, who's on the site now, so that they would have a larger presence. And that's not a done transaction, but we're hoping that that will work out for them and for us. And then on the south end of the building, there's a section of the building that has not been renovated, and UWA Grocery is in a piece of that. We'd like to move UWA over, take down the very south end of the building, build some additional parking so we get a little better parking for our site. And then we'd like to put in a couple of retail tenants in some vacant space that we have near the atrium. And at that point, I think we'd have a building that we could say, okay, we're good here for now. We'd still have the potential of doing some work on the north end of the building where the old Burr Oaks bowling alley was. And we would have to look for the right tenant to kind of work that end of the building.
And whose job is it to get those retail tenants if they exist?
Well, we've listed it with Siegel Gallagher, who is our leasing broker. And they do some outreach and take calls on the space. But it's also our responsibility, staff of the CDA, to make sure that we're doing appropriate outreach and we're looking for tenants who would be good users in that space.
Speaking of appropriate outreach, this is just around the corner from the new Burr Oaks Senior Housing Project, which I think was some of the most controversial aspects were before you started with the CDA.
That's correct.
We ran into something of a public relations problem, I'd say, by exercising eminent domain and adversely taking some apartment buildings that some African-American landlords owned that they were, the arrangement was not financially advantageous to them for this to happen at the time that it did. How much of a blowback do you think has lingered from that? Are you hearing anything in the neighborhood that lingers from that?
I don't hear anything negative about that. I hear positive things. I think there were a series of apartment buildings that I didn't see them, but I understand were not managed to their fullest potential. And I think there were, the CDA has the right to condemn for blight. And we use those condemnation rights. Those rights are somewhat more limited now due to some legislation at the state, but we chose to use those rights. The city chose to use those rights. And we took down those older aging apartment buildings. And in its place, we built 50 units of affordable housing for seniors. Great looking property. I think a lot of people feel it was a benefit to the neighborhood. And certainly it's been a benefit for the seniors who are living there to have that kind of quality of housing in a neighborhood where they wanted to live. So I haven't heard continuing dissatisfaction with that transaction. I've heard very positive things from the neighbors.
Another thing we do in economic development is issue industrial revenue bonds. I think $175 million for the Widmer building on campus. How necessary is the CDA in providing that kind of financial tool?
It's a great tool. that's one of the reasons that cities like Madison set up a community development authority, is it does give them the right to issue double tax-exempt bonds. So the interest that gets paid on those bonds is not only exempt from taxes at a federal level, but also at a state level. And so therefore, it's valuable to somebody who's going to lend a property money to be able to get that interest without having to pay taxes on the income. And it allows the development that gets done to be paying a lower rate of interest over time. We do industrial revenue bonds. We also can do housing bonds. And we've done a variety of different transactions over time in the city of Madison. Lease revenue bonds were used to do with the Block 89 transaction. They were used to finance the parking for the Monona Terrace transaction. And I think it's a tool that's in the city's toolbox. They can use the CDA to have this valuable financing. And it's one of the ways we can make transactions work in the city.
And CDA also gets money from it.
Well, we do charge an issuance fee for issuing those bonds. The developer who ultimately is using that financing, we issue We don't take any credit risk. We call it a conduit bond. So we issue the bonds, but we don't take any credit risk. The risk gets passed on to the developer of the property. And for the benefit of that financing, those developers pay us a fee. And that fee we can turn around and use to develop affordable housing, to provide funding for other transactions that we feel are important to the City of Madison.
And the fee for Widmere was, how much did we make on that?
I think the fee was about $500,000.
Yeah. Is that something that staff and the developer negotiate, or is that, okay, this is what it's going to be? How did that number get arrived at?
We have a standard policy which says that you pay 0.5% of the amount of your bond issuance as an issuance fee. You pay a $5,000 application fee if we have to set up a redevelopment district. But in the Widmere case, I think we negotiated a smaller fee because it was such a large transaction. And so in that case, we waived policy and negotiated a transaction that was more advantageous to the property owner.
We've mentioned the staff in various guys and the city. Have you completely figured out the relationship between the City of Madison and the Madison Community Development Authority and the separate jurisdictions and the separate authorities and where we are the same and where we are different?
Well, all of the staff, including myself, are City of Madison employees. So we work for the City of Madison. The City of Madison established the CDA, which, as you mentioned, is a quasi-governmental entity, separate in creation. And then they said, well, the CDA is there as our redevelopment authority, as our housing authority, and as our housing finance authority. And they created that entity so that they could take advantage of various programs that can be run by statute through an entity like that. So our board is independent. They're all selected by the mayor or appointed by the mayor, but they are an independent board. There's an agreement between the City of Madison and the CDA that says the City of Madison will provide the CDA with the staff and the funds necessary to operate. And so that agreement is really the tie between the two. And so while I am a City of Madison employee, they lend me to the CDA to do the work of the CDA.
Wait a minute, I think they charge us for you.
Well,
I don't think they lend you to us.
The CDA,
I think they rent you.
Well, the CDA has its own budget. The Redevelopment Authority has a budget. Housing Operations has a budget. And this year, the budget for the CDA in 2012 on the redevelopment side has no city levy involved. And so truly the revenues of the CDA are paying for my salary and also for various other city employees. The city attorney's office does work for us. The city real estate staff does work for us, and they get charged back to the redevelopment division. But on the other hand, the City of Madison also backstops, and in many cases over the past years has funded our shortfalls between our revenues and our expenses. And so they provide us with some supplemental funding to the extent it's necessary.
We mentioned redevelopment districts a little while ago. Let's explain what it is that the CDA does in terms of a redevelopment district and what the CDA does not do regarding TIF.
CDA does not do anything regarding TIF, but tax incremental financing requires a redevelopment district be established. And so the CDA is the authority that actually creates that redevelopment district. That's one of our authorities, that's one of our rights. And so to the extent TIF is necessary, the blight study that comes through the CDA and is approved by the CDA, and the redevelopment district is set up under the CDA. But the TIF is actually a City of Madison financing tool, not a CDA financing tool.
And what is the relationship between the city staff helping to draw the district and justify the creation of the redevelopment district and the staff that deals with any TIF aspects that arise out of that district? Mm.
Our City of Madison real estate staff are really the long-term experts in terms of hiring a blight study, understanding the laws of creating a redevelopment district, and they're lent to the CDA. We get charged for their time, but they're lent to the CDA so we can use their expertise. And so we have staff in our real estate department who actually run that process, but they come before the CDA board to actually get the district and the district boundaries approved. And then there's other staff in the city real estate under our economic development department that actually underwrites TIF financing. And so those are not the same people, but they are in close proximity to them in terms of their division.
And how do the lines of a redevelopment district get drawn?
You know, I don't know, because I haven't drawn those lines. I think somebody said, oh, they try to make them in the shape of an animal. But no, we don't think that's really
mounds.
How it gets
that's
done.
Else,
yeah. So I'm not sure exactly how they determine those districts. We'd have to have Dan Rolfs come in and give us a lesson on that.
Now, we are going to be approving one, presumably, maybe by the time this airs,
correct.
There will be a new redevelopment district on East Washington Avenue. What will that provide for?
There's a redevelopment district on East Washington Avenue so that the city would have the option to use various tools. One of the tools they could use would be to have the CDA issue double tax exempt bonds. But one of the other tools they could use to encourage development would be tax incremental financing. And I know the city has plans on those blocks on East Washington Avenue to try to assist some developers in doing developments there. And therefore, they're creating this redevelopment district so that they have a full set of tools to help that development happen.
Now, creating the redevelopment district will also at least allow for the exercise of eminent domain and the CDA taking possession through the statutory process, but that is one of the things that comes along with the redevelopment district, right?
That is absolutely correct.
Is anything contemplated along those lines in this one on East Washington Avenue?
No, the city nor the CDA we don't have any plans to use our eminent domain rights.
I look back on some of the debates over the Overture Center, mm-hmm. some of the, now you were around, but you were just not.
And that was well before my time here, but I was in Madison.
And, you know, personally, I just think I got rolled. there were more questions I should have asked about that. And see, this is one of the frustrations that I as a commissioner have sometimes is the map comes, the blight study comes, the terms of the deal come. This is what we've negotiated, and it's like, okay, well, yeah. And there are a lot of things that aren't really board discussions and board evaluations. It's board imprimatur, to what staff has already done. Do you ever sense that?
Well, I can sense it from the board when they feel that way, because you're a vocal person. You give us feedback on that. You sit on lots of other commissions where things have come before you that seemed like they were done. Staff said, mm-hmm. I think we should approve this planned unit development. And you would say, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And I think the CDA board, whether or not people say this is a done deal, it's not a done deal. The CDA board has the right to approve the district redevelopment districts, the terms of leases at the Village on Park, and when we bring them forward, whether we say it's a done deal or not, it's not a done deal until the CDA board says yes, it is.
I don't know, when Don Mark says it's, you know, it's 250 a square foot, that's what we've negotiated, you sort of feel, okay, well, but now that I know I can say no.
You can say no.
All the more better. We are talking with CDA Director Natalie Erdman. It is the March episode of Access City Hall on the Madison City Channel. We'll take a short pause for the cause and be right back. Stay with us. Thank you.
you earn your GED diploma, the barriers in your life fall. Take the first step and get free GED information in your area at 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or yourged.org. Earn your GED diploma and begin your brighter future.
And welcome back to the March episode of Access City Hall on the Madison City Channel. We're talking with CDA Executive Director Natalie Erdman about the activities and operations of the Madison Community Development Authority. Let's talk about some housing projects. One that is real high on my hit parade, the Revival Ridge, or what most people refer to as the Allied redevelopment. We came to the city of Madison about 4 years or so, maybe even five years, maybe 5 years or so ago now, and said, give us money, we're gonna buy these properties that are in at the sheriff's sale, we're going to build some new housing, and then we're even going to build owner-occupied housing. Phase one done, we're turning to phase two. Mm-hmm. How are we doing?
Well, I think we're doing well. Phase one was 49 units of affordable housing, quality affordable housing. And there, as you know, there's a lot of affordable housing on Allied Drive, and the real question is it quality housing? Is it, does it support stability in the neighborhood? And I think we have several landlords in that area, including ourselves now, who are really looking at having a quality environment for people to live in there. So the first phase, which you were very involved in, affordable rental housing, very successful, fully occupied, I think well run.
A lot of Section 8 vouchers to help support the finances.
Exactly. So I think at least 30 of the apartments at Revival Ridge have a Section 8 voucher attached to them. So the person who lives there only pays 30% of their income in rent. And we get part of the other rent from HUD. So that takes about a third of the site. The other two-thirds of the site is scheduled for owner-occupied housing. About one-third in the middle was to be multifamily, so condominiums, townhomes, something of that nature. And the third on the end was going to be single family. And when the city turned that property over to the CDA, they turned it over saying, here, you all should redevelop this property, but when you do it, you need to do some rental housing, do some owner-occupied housing, and in particular, you need to look at that owner-occupied housing serving a broad range of incomes. So some of it for very low-income people, some of it for moderate-income people, some of it for people above that moderate income level. So we're now getting ready for the second phase, which is 24 single family lots. And we're consciously putting together a program which would do outreach in the neighborhood, bring people in, and then help to screen those people in terms of their readiness to get a mortgage and own a home, and provide those people who are interested in those first lots with some down payment assistance, provide them with a home buyer education and readiness program so that they can get themselves to a point where their credit is good, where they have enough saved for a down payment, and then therefore are able to enter ownership with a really solid base. So we'll be looking at doing that outreach and starting the sale of those lots this year, 2012.
The council directed us to provide so that a third of the units would be owned and occupied by households at 30 to 50% of Dane County median income.
Correct.
How difficult will that be?
I think that's very difficult. I think it's difficult if you don't think ahead about how you're going to support those families who are of lower income in home ownership. And I think we've spent a lot of time on how do you make this successful. You can make the home affordable by driving down the mortgage payment. And you can do that by a variety of down payment assistance programs that are currently available through the city for lower income residents as well as first time home buyers. We can do that by discounting the land value for people who are income qualified. And then we can do that by making sure we're building an energy efficient home so that once somebody's in the home, they aren't paying high utility costs, but are instead paying low utility costs. So you have to look at all those pieces to make that home ownership affordable and to get those payments, those monthly home ownership payments, down to a level that somebody can afford. And then you have to say, in addition to that, we're going to do what I was just talking about, which is home ownership education and readiness. Let's make sure that the families who are buying those homes, who are of lower incomes, have the opportunity to really understand, to build their credit so they have good credit, to understand budgeting, to understand how a mortgage works, to understand what the responsibilities of home ownership are. And then that, I think, gives them a solid base for being a good homeowner on Allen Drive.
Can we somehow use our authority to issue bonds to create a pool of money that we can then loan directly?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how we would use bonds to do that. But we could look at some other funding sources in terms of ways for us to actually lend money directly. At this point in time, our program is to say we're going to provide subsidies to help get to a point where the family can actually afford the mortgage. Our other ways to make these homes happen for those people who are in the lower income ranges is to partner with people like Habitat for Humanity or Moving Out, where they have some additional subsidies that they get, usually from the city or from a donor base, so that they can make those homes even more affordable. And so I think Habitat for Humanity is a good partner for us on Allied. Moving Out, who usually works with people with disabilities in helping them obtain housing, they might be a good partner for us. I think we're very open to working with some of the nonprofits who can build homes for lower-income people as well.
Off the top of your head, do you know what 30% to 50% of median income translates into when it comes to figuring out what level of mortgage they can afford?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't. But I think if you're at the 50% to 60% range, you're talking about a monthly payment, mortgage, insurance, taxes, figured in, of about $900 a month. So you have to really work hard to get down to that kind of affordability.
And what are we doing in terms of a pattern book, a pattern of the architecture? So do we want the homes that are going to be built there to all look alike? Do we want wildly divergent? What is the CDA telling people who want to build the houses what they should look like?
We have a set of architectural guidelines that say that you have to get approved to build on a lot. In the new subdivision, the 24 single family lots, we refer to as Mosaic Ridge. So somebody who wants to build a house in Mosaic Ridge has to turn in their plans, and those plans have to meet the guidelines that we've set forth. And those guidelines generally require a fairly high quality of architectural design, diversity of color and materials, appropriate size and scale for the lots, et cetera. From my standpoint, that can be a modern home, that can be a traditional home, that can be prairie looking. I don't have any preconceived notions of making every home look the same. I think we want to make a neighborhood that has high quality homes in it, that people feel good about living next to their neighbor, but not necessarily saying this is going to be a Disneyland of a certain style. We probably will have some homes that if somebody wants the CDA to build a home for them, we will have some plans where we say, here's a house that we could build for you. But I wouldn't expect all the houses to look alike.
The Phase 1 Revival Ridge rental units has been open for over a year now. What have we seen in terms of the effect on the neighborhood of the development?
Opened the end of 2009, so we're actually going on almost 2 full years of operations. I think you have stable housing there with a landlord who cares about whether people are good neighbors or not good neighbors. And I think that has a generally positive effect. I think actually just the physical, taking a set of buildings that are older and decayed and not well maintained and removing them and then putting in their place a new structure, just visually, it makes the street feel better. That Allied Drive has these repeated 4 to 8 unit buildings, and it's very much a soldier course, and they're probably built in the 60s, maybe the 50s and the 60s. And I think the new architecture is really a positive thing for the environment.
I thought the most fun we had was picking the street names.
Well, I wasn't around for them, but I know that you had a key hand in that.
It was painful. It was just like, you'd come up with a name. No, that doesn't work. It was fine. You know, I think we came up with some good names. We got Frida Kahlo and Mike McKinney and
Gene Parks
and Percy
Way.
Julian. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's a nice, I don't think there are a lot of streets in America named after Frida Kahlo, so I thought that was a nice gesture.
You were involved from the beginning. What do you think about the impact of Revival Ridge?
Police calls are down.
Definitely.
You know, that to me is, okay, that is a clear indication. The same way with Lake Point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at that South Madison neighborhood pre-Monona Shores and Winona Way, and you look at it post, oh yeah. Police calls are down. They've mm-hmm. they've done away with the neighborhood officer. And if you have a neighborhood officer before the project and you don't need one afterwards, that tells me something positive has happened. But speaking of Lake Point, that's another difficult project in terms of the overall success. Decisions were made before you came on, but what do you think the problem there is with selling enough units to make that a stable, economically successful mm-hmm. project?
So you're referring to the CDA had a significant redevelopment effort that you were involved in. It was really our first major.
Actually, that was even before me.
Oh, it was.
Monona Shores and Winona Way was actually under okay. Chairperson Therese Berceau.
Oh, well, you had a good predecessor then. Major area, used to be Broadway Simpson. High crime, lots of police calls, lots of violence. And the CDA and the city together bought a property that was in foreclosure and renovated portions of it, took down portions of it, added some commercial space, did some condominiums, redeveloped some condominiums there, and have really stabilized the neighborhood. And when we look at crime now there, the crime there is no higher than any other neighborhood in our city. But in that process, the CDA also financed the development of condominiums called Lake Point condominiums. Some of them were existing buildings that were renovated. Some of them are new townhomes. And that developer failed to finish. And because we had financed it, we ended up taking those back. We've sold most of them. We have about 11 left, but it's been very slow. And I would say it's slow there really because the condominium market in Madison, This is one of the impacts of the recession. Condominiums, townhomes, not moving the way they did. And if you're in a neighborhood that might still have a little bit of a shroud of not a great neighborhood, it's even harder to compete against a lot of product that's on the market and not moving. So I think we've done a pretty good job at chipping away, selling some units there. But I think if you look across the city overall, owning townhomes or condominiums right now is a tough thing to be selling.
How big a problem was the lack of street parking, the lack of adequate street parking?
The lack of adequate parking, what we're finding is those townhomes which have a one-car garage and barely a space for something in the driveway, we have families who just say, you know, we're a two-car family, there's not enough parking here for us. And so I think parking has been a hindrance in selling the townhomes. Conversion units, it doesn't seem to be as big of an issue.
Way up on the other side of town, the north side of town, Truax,
yeah.
which has been a very ambitious project that is involving several buildings doing several levels of improvements. Speak briefly about that.
Truax, 18.8 acres. The city acquired that as low-rent public housing back in the 40s, I think 1948. And the buildings are aged. And the CDA started well before my time the renovation of 71 of those units, those apartment units, and made them larger, brought them up to current day standards in terms of HVAC and heating and ventilating and air conditioning and modern conveniences, and really turned them into a more desirable home for our residents. And so we've just finished that. Of course, those were almost immediately occupied upon completion. And now we're looking at the next portion, which is to build some new construction homes on that site so that we can move people into the new construction and then take down some additional housing that's aged and needs to be replaced.
We've got just a couple minutes left. What are the two or three biggest ticket things that the CDA is facing for 2012?
I think we'll continue to face some challenges with HUD and the funding for our low-rent public housing and our Section 8 program, and we'll have to continue to be cognizant of sources of income to fill those gaps as the government cuts back. And then from there, we're talking about Allied Drive Phase 2, we're talking about Truax Phase 2, and we're talking about kind of what our next redevelopment area will be. And I think we're set up well to just continue our process of improving some of our more challenged neighborhoods.
When you say what our next redevelopment will be, are you saying what neighborhood we'll be in or what specific? Will it be Romness? Will it be the Triangle? Will it be, aren't those the two?
Those are probably the most likely sources. But we do have some other, you have Webb Rethke, you have Tenney, which is on the east side. You have Baird Fisher. So we do have some other neighborhoods where we have 20 or more affordable housing units there. And I think we're most likely going to focus on the redevelopment of some of that housing that we own that's aged. But I wouldn't say that there couldn't be an opportunity where the city says to us, hey, this is a neighborhood where we need the experience of the CDA to come in and assist us. Mm-hmm. So we're always on call to a certain extent to assist the city in their efforts.
What has surprised you about the job?
What has surprised me? That's a tough one. I'm not sure I was surprised because I'm not sure why I knew what I was getting into. And what I really liked is learning a whole new series of things. It's been an interesting opportunity to be inside the city versus to be outside the city and looking in. And I have a much greater appreciation for what city employees do on a day-to-day basis to keep our city operating.
What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you were in the private sector dealing with the city?
I don't think people outside the city really have a idea of how many tasks city employees are taking on at a time and how many masters they're really serving. I would have been more inclined to spend time with city staff really asking them about, okay, where do you think this is going and how would you suggest that I move my development through the system?
So if you ever retire from the CDA and go back to the private sector, you'll be all set up.
Yeah, well, I don't plan to retire too soon.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. We have been talking with the apparently permanent director of the Community Development Authority, Natalie Erdman. It's been about a year and a half.
Yes.
And you're still enjoying yourself?
I am still enjoying myself.
And this
myself.
Was okay?
This was all right.
Okay. This has been the March episode of Access City Hall on the Madison City Channel. For everyone here at the Madison City Channel, I'm Stu Levitan. Thanks for watching. We'll see you back here next month.